Steven, let's do some of this stuff live now. Okay. In a world where public hysteria and misinformation can still sway rational minds, the Salem witch trials stand as a chilling reminder of how fear and ignorance can spiral into life-altering tragedies. Today, we're journeying through the shadowy annals of American history with Stephen Holly Martin, a three-time Writer's Digest Book Award winner, editor and publisher of the Oakley Press, and the author of A Witch in the Family. This book not only showcases Stephen's meticulous evidence-based research, but also reveals a deeply personal connection. His grandmother, Susanna North Martin, was one of the souls tragically hanged during the Salem witch trials. Stephen provides us with an intimate, multifaceted lens to revisit and deconstruct this complex and often misunderstood part of our history. So sit back, relax. Let's learn something about what happened during the witch trials. Here we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Michael J., and welcome to A Funny Way of Looking, where diverse voices meet open minds. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can find us over on afunnywayoflooking.com. Today, we have this awesome guest, Stephen Holly Martin. Hello, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing great, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
I asked you a little while ago, is this going to be a fun show since we're talking about witches and people getting killed? We're going to have a good time between you and me anyway, regardless. So, hardest question of the day. Who do you want to do a shout out to?
Well, I want to do a shout out to my oldest son, Holly Martin, who is he and his bride, because he is getting married this Saturday.
There we go.
Birmingham, Alabama. And I can't wait to be there with him.
All right. Holly Martin, yeah. That's an awesome shout out. I love that. Let's jump into this. I think I want to know more about the witch trials. So you've got a personal connection to the Salem witch trials. And why don't you walk us through that? And that's going to kick us off here today.
You know, Michael, it's like I grew up with the Salem witch trials. My mother was really very, very interested in it because my seven times great grandmother, Susanna North Martin, great, 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 great grandmother, direct lineage, was one of the Salem witches, supposedly. Now, my research indicates that she was falsely accused and falsely convicted and falsely hanged. But nevertheless, people thought she was a witch. And my mother just could not get over that. Actually, it was her husband's ancestor. But the idea that people could accuse you of something like witchcraft and hang you for it was just, it really influenced me to realize that you can't always take for granted or seriously what people in authority say or think or believe, because the people in authority back then in 1692 believed in witches and believed that witches ought to be hanged, and that's what they did. So yeah, it was something I grew up with, and it affected me in that way that I've become a very kind of free thinker in terms of what I believe is true and what is not necessarily go along with what people in authority think.
So, what you said just brought up so many questions in my head. The first thing I want to ask you is, like, when you're writing about this, about witches and about your family, how do you deal with that? I know it was, hundreds of years ago now, but how does it affect you personally when you actually start writing about it?
Well, it makes me think, and one of the things it made me want to figure out what the true nature of reality is. You know, is there such a thing as magic? Is there such a thing as disembodied spirits that can roam the earth and cause people trouble? Is there such a thing as Satan? Because what they believed back then was that you could form a pact with Satan and it would make your life better. Of course, when you died, you were going to go to hell. But nevertheless, in the meantime, things would be rosy. And part of the reason they believed that, at least in Massachusetts, where the Puritans were in charge, and it was a theocracy then. It was not like our government today. The Bible was the rule book. And in Exodus, there is a passage that says, thou shalt not allow a witch or a sorceress to live. And so they took that as the law. And they believed that some of the women and a couple of men were in league with Satan. And
wow,
why would they do that? Why would somebody be in league with Satan? Well, the Puritans also believed in the verse in the Bible that said, many are called, but few are chosen.
Right.
You might be someone who goes by all the rules, but if you're not chosen, you're not going to make it to heaven anyway. And if you came to the conclusion you weren't one of the chosen, you might as well get in league with the devil and make things pretty rosy for yourself in the meantime.
How did they decide who was a witch? Because and that leads into another thing. We have modern day witches now, which I think are the same as they were in Salem. So how did they determine who was?
Let me say a little bit about the modern day witches. I'm not an expert on this, but I have looked into it because of my ancestor. Modern day witches are not, don't consider themselves in league with the devil. It's more of a nature worship kind of situation where they believe that the divine exists in all things, and that they also believe in karma, which is that whatever you give out, whatever you do come or say comes back to you in terms of. So if you do something that's evil, if you hurt someone else, you're going to be hurt. So modern witches are different than, whereas the witches back in 17th century that we're talking about today were might put a curse on someone who they might, people thought they would, if they had something against you, they might cause your cow to keel over and die by putting a curse on it. Mm-hmm. They didn't know about disease and how it happened. The germs and bacteria and so forth weren't discovered until Louis Pasteur back in the 19th century, two centuries later. Mm-hmm. So they thought that things like that were caused by either magic or a witch or maybe God was punishing them or whatever. And for Puritans, life was a test. You were, if you passed the test and were chosen, you got to go to heaven. So how do they determine who is a witch?
Right. Well,
first of all, someone would accuse them. They would say, so-and-so's specter came to me during the night and tormented me when I was trying to sleep, And so once somebody was accused, they would examine them. And if it was a woman, they would strip them completely naked and look for what was called a witch's tit, which was a pimple type thing on the body where supposedly their familiar, who might be a cat, for example, mm-hmm. would suck the essence, life essence from the witch, or the devil might, where he got his life force. He would get it that way. So they would examine them physically, and then they would have a trial. First, they would start with, before a trial, they would have depositions where different witnesses were called, and they would give testimony about things they saw or what the supposed witch actually did or didn't do. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example of that. My ancestor, Susanna North Martin, was a fairly old woman, particularly for that time in history. She was in her 70s when she was accused. But she was a widow, and she was able to, her kids had all grown. She had something like six children. They'd all grown up and gone on their own. And yet she had this farm to take care of. And she was able to take care of this farm herself, chop the wood, plow the field, plant the crops. And people didn't think that a woman would be able to do that. Woman was the weaker sex. It was a man who was supposed to do all those sort of things. And so they figured that she must use witchcraft in order to get those chores done.
Who actually accused her of being a witch? Did your research show that?
Yeah, she was accused by, she was well known in the area. She was actually not from Salem. She was from Amesbury, which is about 20 miles away. And she had been thought to be a witch for quite some time. I'm not sure there was any one particular accuser, but when the thing got going, she was called into the courthouse and examined. And the, if you know anything about the witch trials, you know that there was a group of young women, really some of them children. I think the ages ranged from 9 to 20, who had been meeting in the house of the local preacher, Reverend Paris. And Reverend Paris was, and his wife were gone a lot, tending to their flock or, you know, around the area. And they had two slaves, Tituba and her husband, whose name escapes me right now, but they were both Carib Indians. They came from the Caribbean. Reverend Paris had been in Aruba before he came to Massachusetts. And the Tituba took care of the children, and she would work magic tricks in their kitchen, and this would attract the children from all around.
Like, so, magic tricks, like card tricks and things like that? Or
more, for example, she would do fortune telling kind of things.
Okay, so tarot.
One of the things that she did was she would break an egg and put it into a glass of water, and how that egg formed would, she would read that kind of like people read tea leaves and things.
Okay.
To tell people's futures. And so what happened is Tituba, doing these magic tricks and voodoo kind of things that came from Barbados, I mean, or Aruba, these children became affected. They, I think, may have actually been possessed. I think that what happened is sort of like, have you ever heard of Ouija boards and how things can go
really yes.
when people start working with, you know, if you Google Ouija warning, all kinds of stories will come up about people who have had weird things happen to them because somehow it seems to open a passageway between, you know, a world that exists somewhere else in some other dimension and ours. Well, I think something like that must have happened with these girls because they started acting really weird. You know, they would have fits and they would, you know, their tongues would go out and they started accusing people. And I guess it was one of them who eventually accused Susanna too. But there were a lot of people who thought she must be a witch. I'll give you another one example of the things that came up in the trial. As I said, she lived in Amesbury, which was about 20 miles away from Salem. And she went to visit a friend one spring day after it had been raining a lot. And she walked, I think, something like 10 miles or so. And when she got to the person's home she was visiting, she didn't have any mud on her shoes or on her long dress. And so the person who supposed friend thought she must have flown there. Well, what Susanna probably did was stop somewhere on the way and wash her feet off, you know, carry her shoes, go barefoot and hold her dress up and then wash her feet off and put her shoes on before she went to the person's house. But they thought that since she didn't have mud on her shoes and on her dress, she must have flown there. So that was part of the evidence that was given at the trial.
Wow. She must have hidden her broom like in her purse when she got there and then
sorts of things. Exactly. Yeah.
That is astounding that like just the rumor of things makes this trial happen. And by the way, how many witches were actually killed in the trial because of the trials?
Well, there were 19 women and one man hanged, and there was a man who was never actually went to trial, who was crushed with stones when they were trying to get him to plea. when they couldn't try you under the rules they had. I guess that's true today. You can't be tried until you make a plea of guilty or not guilty. And he refused to plea. And so what they did is they laid him on the ground and they started piling rocks on him to get him to say guilty or not guilty. But in his final words were more weight. And they put a stone on it and it crushed his chest and he died.
Wow.
The other 20 or so were all hanged. And I really delved into this thing. It's amazing how much information exists still today that can be accessed online. All the depositions for the trials, all the actual testimony and trial documentation, it's there. And it also the accounts of people who witnessed it firsthand are available. So in reading through all of that, I believe that there was at least one woman who was practicing witchcraft. And the reason being that when they searched her house, they found effigy dolls, you know, dolls that are made to be in tortured or whatever.
Like the voodoo dolls.
From somebody that person didn't like. So she was probably, her name was Bishop. I've forgotten her first name. And other than that, Tituba, the slave, Caribbean Indian slave from Aruba, she didn't hide what she did. She came out all about it in the trial. And they put her in prison, but they never executed her. You know, if you admitted to being a witch, said, yes, I did it and I'm sorry. And then you ask for forgiveness from God, because, you know, Christian religion is that if you admit your sins and believe in Christ and you're forgiven. And so you could avoid being hanged by admitting you were a witch.
But the 20 people that died, did they not know this, or they just didn't have good lawyers?
They were so religious and devout Christians that they felt they couldn't break the commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness.
Gotcha.
And so they figured they were damned either. Here's what they figured. They figured if they told the truth, were executed, they'd go to heaven. If they lied and didn't get executed, they'd go to hell for breaking the commandment. Wow. So it was a catch-22, I guess.
Definitely. That's the prisoner's dilemma for you.
So, yeah. So Susanna did not, I mean, she went to her death maintaining her innocence, as did all the others. In fact, one of the man who was executed, I think his name was Barrows or something, had been a minister and had left Salem and gone somewhere. But anyway, he was accused and he was convicted. And he actually, before being hanged, said the Lord's Prayer, which according to the lore about witches, at least the evil type witches, they cannot say the Lord's Prayer, any prayer to God. They can't even say the word God, G-O-D, God.
Uh-huh.
But he was hanged anyway, so I guess they were bound to determine. Eventually, however, they realized the big mistake. They had hanged a bunch of people that didn't deserve it.
What made them stop? Like, after 20 people, they go like, yeah, okay, we got to stop.
You know, over 150 were accused and a whole bunch of them were in jail. And it was getting out of hand. I mean, these girls were accusing anybody and everybody. What finally happened, what brought it to an end, people began to doubt. There were some doubters. There was a Baptist minister who told them they were making a big mistake. But the thing that actually stopped it was the governor. Governor Phelps had his wife was accused. And once his wife was accused, he called it to a halt. Gotcha. That's what ended it.
Gotcha. So he was really the ringleader, but he got caught, so he's got to stop it.
Maybe a little bit too far.
Yeah. So what kind of things, like, do you see in modern times, in our time, that are similar to the witch trials, where somebody gets accused and all of a sudden it just blows up into something, but there's no evidence? It just,
you know, I see politicians on both sides of the aisle who say stuff that, you know, people believe, but I don't believe, you know, that, you know, it's that kind of thing to just lie and have people believe you, I think is prevalent, perhaps even more so today. I think that people back then, for the most part, believed what they said. When somebody went into the courtroom and took the oath and said so-and-so's specter had come to visit in the night, well, maybe they'd had a bad dream or something, and they really believed it. But today, I think it's even worse, because I just think so many people will tell falsehoods and accuse people of things that didn't happen just for their own benefit. And so that's kind of what I see. I think that you know, some of the charges, for example, of racism are absurd. You know, of course it still exists and there are white supremacists and so on, but, you know, I just think that card gets played too much.
Yep.
Because I don't think it's, you know, most people are not racist anymore. I grew up in the Jim Crow South, and I know what racism is. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's gone overboard. But again, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It does. But it's not the problem it used to be. I can tell you that for sure.
I'd agree with that. I want to, I love what we're talking about, this whole, the witch trials. I want to find out more about you, Stephen. And we're going to play a little game here called This or That. I'm going to give you two choices and you choose one or the other, but not neither or both. And if you want to describe what your thinking is about either one, you can do that. There's no problem. It's how you interpret it and how you play the game. So let's learn a little bit more about Stephen Holly Martin. First one, if we had witch hunts, what do you think? Twitter, cancel culture, or tabloid media? Which one would be worse, you think?
Probably Twitter, because that seems to be how the main way that we communicate things like that. Although the woke thing can be pretty much kind of what we were just talking about, things going a little bit overboard.
I'm telling you.
But I'll go with Twitter, which is now X.
X, you're right. I still haven't started calling it X yet because I can't ever work that into a sentence. Let's talk about historical movies. Fact-based or fictionalized?
Fact? What is that?
Fact-based or fictionalized?
Movies?
Yeah. How should they be depicted?
You know? I think they're fictionalized. I mean, you know, things like Avatar movies or you know, superhero stuff, that's fiction. Some of them are fact-based, but I would say the vast majority fictional.
Gotcha. Views on witchcraft. Real-world witchcraft or fantastical elements people just don't know about?
I think that it's real world or fiction. What are the choices again?
Whether or not it's fictionalized or the real world elements in any of the witchcraft that's out there now.
I think there's some real world elements in the witchcraft. I think that belief can create all kinds of things that we would consider impossible.
Yeah. When we talk about paranoia, which one was better or worse? The Cold War or social media frenzy?
Cold War
or social media frenzy, as far as paranoia?
I said social media frenzy.
It's pretty nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can whip up just about anything on social media these days.
Yeah, too much.
Yeah. As far as judgment and people judging things, peer-reviewed articles or Yelp reviews?
Yelp reviews. You know, peer, I have a whole thing about scientific materialism being off base, which has been the worldview of scientists now for almost 200 years. And there's no way that the only thing exists is matter. So if somebody writes an article for a peer review journal, they're going to have to conform to that, which is false. And I've written several books that lay the evidence out for the fact that we are all part of one consciousness, and that, as the quantum physicists say, actually it's consciousness, it's observation that creates reality, not the other way around. So
we'll have to have a discussion one day on simulation theory.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, are your books really behind you, or are they only there when you turn around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny way of looking at you. Is that really behind you?
No, that's just you're just making it up. Okay. Your personal beliefs, science-based or faith-based?
Science-based.
Yeah. And you've done the research, so you know what it's like.
I've done the research. And again, my books, you can, there are several of them. Go to my website. They're two on the homepage. Mm-hmm. One is The Witch Book, and the other one is Death is Fiction. And that lays out my belief about what reality is all about.
Cool. I will definitely be checking that out. Confession under pressure, enhanced interrogation, or cancel culture?
What is the kind of pressure?
Enhanced interrogation.
Oh.
Just confession under pressure, like laying the stones on the guy.
Uh-huh. That's
one way to kind of interrogate somebody. But, enhanced interrogation or cancel culture? Cancel culture. Yeah, I think it does, especially through X. You get a lot of stuff out there these days.
That's right.
If we have community policing, what's more effective, neighborhood watch or surveillance cameras?
Neighborhood watch. I like people.
Okay. What about accusations? Because we had a lot of that going on with the Salem witch trials, whistleblowing or internet shaming? We didn't have it back then, but now what do you think is more out there?
Internet shaming.
Yeah. You can shame somebody pretty quick on the internet. corporate culture or political parties, as far as groupthink?
Corporate culture or political parties? I guess it's political parties.
Yeah. It's hard to know, right? Because I don't. Go ahead.
Yeah, that is a hard one. Mm-hmm. But I think we have kind of a group think, and it's darn shame people can't compromise and work things out. Things have gotten a little bit too much of that whole separation.
Yep.
Situation.
How about as far as moral responsibility, individual or collective?
Moral responsibility, I would say, as an individual.
Yeah. What do you think it was for the Salem trials?
I think it was they went by the Bible. They had some doctrine that they followed, and they followed it. It was groupthink. It was like, this is the way it is. And, the idea of thou shalt not allow a sorceress to live or witch to live. I mean, that, yeah.
It's a tough thing. You got to kind of have some of both, I guess.
Yeah.
As far as emotional justice, you got public sentiment or our judicial system?
Emotional justice?
Yeah.
And the choices were?
Public sentiment or judicial system?
Well, I think we should let the judicial system make those decisions.
Yeah. I think a lot of these things, there's a lot of emotion that plays into all of it, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard sometimes to go, okay, we're going to go by whatever our laws are. And I wonder also, like, were the Salem witch trials that same way? Were they going by their laws?
They were. They're because it was a theocracy. You know, what happened was that the Massachusetts Bay Colony was established by the Puritans as a, with the permission of the king, as a theocracy, that the Bible was the law book.
Yeah.
So that they, and they went by it.
When did we stop going by the Bible and being a theocracy and become a constitutional, whatever we are now?
Constitutional republic. I guess when we became a nation, actually after the Salem witch trials were over for in the early 18th century, early 1700s, people realized the big mistake that had been made there in Massachusetts, and that a lot of innocent people had been hanged. And in fact, the legislature exonerated a number of them, you know, posthumously.
Yeah.
And Susanna didn't get her slate wiped clean until sometime in the 20th century. But many of them did even right after that. And so I believe that one of the things that, and there's some justification for this idea, that much of our Constitution and the idea of separation of state, religion and state came about as a result of the Salem witch trials, that people didn't want to have, you know, the Bible to, as the law. Yeah. And that was true certainly in Virginia. Even before the witch trials, we had here in Virginia some people accused of witches, being witches, but there was a law passed in the House of Burgesses that if you accuse someone of witchcraft and didn't have proof, that you would be fined 1,500 pounds of tobacco, which was the main cash crop. And that was about the equivalent of a small farmer's annual yield. Wow. So we didn't have a whole lot of people accused of witchcraft in Virginia. And it happened. But nothing like what happened over in Massachusetts.
Gotcha. So, Stephen, I want people to be able to stay in touch with you. There's several ways they can do that. They can get you on your website, shmartin.com. You've also got Oakley Press. And for everyone who's listening instead of watching, Oakley is O-A-K-L-E-A, Oakley Press, P-R-E-S-S.com. And you're also over on Facebook, where we all are, at Oakley Press. And you're also on your Instagram. LinkedIn. I'm going to read this nice and slow. It's Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, dash, Holly, H-A-W-L-E-Y, dash, Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. And then here's the confusing part, but it's still there, dash, 82A62B4. I think the easiest way, though, is to really just find you through your website, shmartin.com.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for being here, watching. We can find us over on afunnywayoflooking.com. We're also over the web at Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, all afunnywayoflooking.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter, and we will see you all in the future. This has been fun, Stephen. Thank you very, very much.
Good, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.